This is WNYC. I'm Amy Eddings. The Manhattan skyline is getting thinner. There are about a dozen new needle-thin towers planned for New York City, and they come with a fat price tag. Two duplex apartments at the 157 condo tower have sold for more than $90 million each. Here to talk about the new trend is James Russell, architecture critic for Bloomberg News. Welcome to WNYC.
Happy to be here.
We all know there's little land sitting vacant in Manhattan. So are these needle towers a phenomenon of tiny spaces, a lack of space?
Yes, and the exclusivity of New York and certain locations. And also, when people are willing to pay the kind of money they're paying for these things, it makes it worth it to build extraordinarily expensive buildings, which these are.
So let's define our terms here. What do we mean by skinny towers? What do we mean by tall towers? Because they're both. They're very thin and they're very tall.
They're very slender. So I think the tallest of the bunch is something like 22 times as tall as it is wide. So like an ordinary office building, even like a 50-story office building, maybe is 10 or something. So you see that there are very big difference in how narrow they are. And they'll feel very narrow on the skyline. I'm actually wondering if they're going to look kind of too much like toothpicks compared to other buildings. Say the skinniest of the new towers is about 5,000 square feet. And a big, beefy office building, if it went 50 or 60 stories, would probably be around 25 or 30,000 square feet.
At $90 million a pop, what kind of apartment are you getting in these narrow buildings?
Well, they're duplexes, so they're quite large apartments. I'm not sure the square footage has been disclosed, but let's say they're McMansion-sized apartments way up in the sky. So, you know, you're sharing your view only with hawks flying around. And so that's that really unique quality that makes them so sellable. They have very large, generous rooms. They have at least 5 bedrooms. I don't think any of them have swimming pools, although I've heard rumors to that effect.
Have they had to do clever things with elevators and stairways in order to allow the buildings to be as narrow as they are?
Yes. The elevators, there are not very many of them. There's only, I think, 2 at the top of 157. So they have to be super fast. No one's told me how fast they have to be. But apparently, people at that price point are not going to wait longer than a minute to get from the lobby to their place.
How are they transforming the city?
Well, I think they're really changing the nature of the skyline. For one thing, we're seeing a skyline that's defined by 20, 30, 40, 50-story buildings being redefined by buildings that are, you know, much, much taller. And there's a lot of people who fear they're going to cast gigantic shadows, especially over Central Park. But in fact, because of their thinness, they're not going to have such a strong impact.
12 of these skinny, tall apartment buildings are currently under construction. When are they due to start receiving tenants?
There's 12 that people think might happen.
I see.
Some of these probably won't happen. There's 157 is farthest along. 432 Park is in construction. There's a very tall one down in Tribeca called 56 Leonard. It's in construction. So there, a lot of the others are planned, sort of announced.
157, of course, famous for the crane that drooped after Hurricane Sandy, 80-mile-per-hour winds causing its arm to dangle. You wrote a book about building in an era of climate change called Agile City. How do you see these super tall, thin towers in a post-Sandy and post-9/11 world where blackouts and terrorism are big concerns?
They're not necessarily well aligned to, I think, a greener world. They're very expensive and energy intensive to build. I'm sure they will be sophisticated in the way they handle energy and such other things, but they're not. There's nothing about them that's green, that's for sure.
Security?
Yes. I mean, they'll have extremely high levels of security. Obviously, they'll be doing belt and suspenders in terms of the building systems that they have to protect so that they don't get uninterrupted power. But on the other hand, they do depend on the city's utilities, so there's only so far you can take that. I'm not sure I would regard them as an ideal refuge in a major disaster.
James Russell is an architecture critic for Bloomberg News and the author of The Agile City, Building Well-Being and Wealth in an Era of Climate Change. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is WNYC.